Merry Yule time, witches. We are here, your friends at Hex Rated, Scarlet and Blackbird, and we are here to talk about weird Yule monsters? Traditions? Not sure what you want to call it, but weird Yule things. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, hope you all enjoy. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll see you at episode 100. We're almost there. Stick with us. Thanks for listening.
I'll put a spell on you, 'cause you're mine. You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying.
Welcome to X-Rated.
Oh, hey, I'm Blackbird.
I'm Scarlet. We did it, like, right at the
right
top
at the
of
the top.
Show.
Hey.
Oh, my God.
I don't even have to do it in the interstitial, the intro thing. I don't have to say it, because we just said it. I'm also going to say three words to you that you're going to want to follow up on.
Okay.
Waffle butter cookie.
Say what now?
So
those are the three major food groups in Scarlet's tum-tum.
I'm going to hold it up to the camera so you can get a visual whiff.
Okay, so it looks like a kind of like a waffle cone.
Well, it tastes like a waffle cone, but in a cookie format, but also more buttery.
What is the crunchiness? It looks like crunchy. It's a little pillowier than a cone.
No, it's straight up crunchy. Yeah, here.
But I don't like crunchy.
Crunchity crunch. Well, then I guess you're SOL because it's really good.
Well, more for you.
Buttery. Mm.
I would like to tell you about the beverage I'm drinking.
I would like to hear about it, please.
I am drinking with my Bombilla again out of my Moon Tarot mug. But it is the carrot cake tea that you gifted me. But also, I put 2 bags of Republic of Tea double chocolate mate.
Yeah, you did.
So there's like, because the mate, you know, has that sort of earthy, sort of irony taste, and then the chocolate, and it's all going really, really well together. And then I just gave it a little topping off of heavy whipping cream because I was making cheesecake and I had some cream left over.
Delicious.
So it is a very decadent treat.
I love that. I also would like to say that on our non-sponsored sponsorship of Magic Hour Tea by Zena, she has like crazy recipes like that for her tea where she incorporates, you know, like chocolate shavings and whipped cream and other things. It's just it's delightful. I have made 0 of them, but they all sound fantastic. So yeah, yum. Your drink sounds badass.
It is. It is. It's very delicious. So thank you again for gifting me the tea that was not your favorite, but that I like very much. So
that is quite all right.
Way to pay it forward.
I want it. I want somebody to enjoy it, right? Definitely. Okay. What is new in your witching world?
Not the witching world, but I just went and saw Godzilla minus one. Which I didn't know anything about going into it. I didn't even know it was out. But it is Mr. Scarlet's nonstop birthday week, and he wanted to go. And I love kaiju movies very much.
Yes.
So this is a Japanese Godzilla movie.
Okay.
In contrast to the very unsatisfying Monarch American.
Dude, we started it. I can't do it. It is literally like a soap opera. It's so bad.
It is so cheesy.
There are zero monsters. Like, I'm just waiting for
the first of all,
monsters.
No kaijus.
So much talking. Oh my God.
The two kids are not great at acting.
No.
The dialogue is horrible.
Yes.
It's so cheesy.
Oh, I'm so glad we gave it up. I was like, okay, we're watching For All Mankind now. Fuck this.
Oh, and also, if you're watching it for the I just blanked out on his name. Goldie Hawn's partner.
Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So waiting
it's
for
like
the Kurt Russell.
Father
he doesn't
duo.
Show up until several episodes in. So
no, and his son, though, is there like by episode 2, I think. It's weird. He has a very, very same like facial mannerisms.
And yet, like, significantly less charismatic and
for sure.
sexy.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I don't know what it is, because they look very similar, but he's like...
he has a bland factor. Bland factor 2000. It's very...
Yeah.
He's kind of...
Sorry,
kinda
Wyatt.
Plain. Sorry, dude. Glad you agree with me on that thing. Yuck.
But you know what is not bland factor is the new Japanese Godzilla movie because it is a period piece. It takes place in 1946.
Okay.
So that's great. They went back to a very old school kind of rubber suit monster, which is great because it looks great. All the effects look fantastic because it's all like practical effects and not CG, where it's just this like mush of like gray screensaver bullshit and nothing looks like it has any weight or exists in the world.
Yeah.
But I mean, you are going to laugh. You're going to cry.
Oh, man.
It's super emotional. The acting's great. It's super topical. Has a lot to say about post-war Japan. You know, atomic testing, right to self-defense in post-war Japan. I mean, it's very
amazing.
Political.
Yeah,
it's great. Godzilla chomps on a train in Tokyo. It's like everything that you want. The score is out of this world. The very first time you hear that, dun dun,
shit, you know it's coming.
Dun dun. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. The atomic breath is the most badass it's ever been. Just everything about it is. It's the best Godzilla movie. I'm gonna go ahead and say it. It's the best Godzilla movie ever.
I was gonna go ahead and give the director some love, Takashi Yamazaki. Written and directed by...
Yeah, I was reading up a little bit on it. Apparently, the production of the film was delayed for some time because he had a vision of what he wanted to do, and he had to really fight with like the studio and the producers and to get it how he wanted it. And gods of kaiju bless him, because
I can't wait to see it.
It's a masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. I don't know what else to say.
You have already made me very excited to see this.
Fun element, which was slightly less exciting to Mr. Scarlet because he has severe depth perception issues, but we went and saw it at a Cinemark with their new Screen X or Space X, or I forget what it's not Space X, it's something Screen X, I think.
Space X, no thank you.
Stop calling everything X.
Right.
As a person from the 90s, please stop. However, it's really cool. It's actually three screens, so it's like a normal screen in the front,
okay,
and then at a 270 degree angle there's two other screens, and so it's got this sort of panoramic view. And that sounds like it'd be weird and distracting, but the two other screens, the peripheral screens, are calibrated to be seen through your peripheral vision. So you shouldn't be like looking at them. And if you do, you will see that they're kind of stretched out, and the colors are. But what I noticed is, I wouldn't say it's as strong of a vertigo effect as you would have if you were in one of those dome IMAXs, if you've ever been to like a museum that's doing one of those.
Yep.
But it definitely enhanced the vertigo with kind of air or sea type scenes that are meant to be kind of anxiety inducing and scary and shaking.
Yeah.
So if you get seasick very easily, maybe don't try this out. But if you don't, I thought it enhanced the movie quite a lot. At worst, it just wasn't distracting and I didn't notice it. At best, I felt like it really enhanced it. And they did some really creative things with it too. So it wasn't just like extra footage or like, you know, they just stretched the screen or something. But there were a few scenes, you know, where there's like dust and they're like literally waiting for the dust to settle. And you know that because they're like, oh shit, did we kill Godzilla? And the answer is no, they didn't. Not a spoiler. But when you're waiting for the dust to settle, they did some interesting stuff of having the peripheral view still be kind of like dusty and out of focus to kind of give you that feeling of, you know, if you've ever gotten lightheaded or gotten conked in the head or something, you know, your peripheral vision clouds, you know,
right.
So it kind of simulates that feeling of being faint or being dizzy or something. So it actually enhanced those kind of moments where the characters are in shock, there's been like a big blast or something like that.
Now I've done some things that people on normal podcasts do, and I looked this up while you were talking. It's called Screen X.
Okay.
And it is a 270 degree screen.
I said that.
I said it again.
Thank you. But you said it with authority.
Actually, I was probably busy like trying to find some more shit on it while you said it. So that's my bad. But it is like it's pretty. It's not very widespread. It said 364 screens in 37 countries. So, I mean, maybe find one near you. But yeah, this sounds pretty rad. It kind of like it shows kind of a visual of it, and it just looks like you're sitting like with three giant computer monitors like around you. It's fancy.
Right. But yeah. I mean, I think the thing that was good about this is the side screens were definitely calibrated to it, you know, it's not just the same.
Right. No, it's
field
panoramic,
of vision.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not just like it's a curved screen.
Right.
It's the stuff that's meant to be in your peripheral vision is actually edited to function that way. So if you were looking directly at it, it would actually look kind of weird. But
wow.
Anyway, very enjoyable. Godzilla.
Do you think it made it? Like, do you think it's going to be still good without that? Because I don't want to.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. For sure.
Okay.
I would definitely, if you have a choice to go somewhere that has what you believe to be a superior sound system.
Oh yeah,
I would. I'm sure. I would vote for that just because the score is. I mean, the Godzilla theme is fucking iconic as fuck. But it was just like I was like clapping aloud.
Oh yeah! Yes. Wow, that's a strong good feeling. That's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I am super excited now because I have not, like, there hasn't been a movie that I've really wanted to, like, super wanted to see in many, many months. So, like, this is exciting.
Or things that, well, I knew would be, like, I mean, good, but that I wasn't, like, I didn't think they were going to be a good time watching. Like, right. Oppenheimer is good.
Yeah.
But it's not, like, a fun
You don't
watch.
Feel good after. You feel kind of gross. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to watch that, too. I haven't seen that yet. That's exciting. What else is happening in your world that is witchy or not?
Well, it's sort of tangentially related to what we are going to be talking about, which is Yule. So I got my lights up.
Nice.
I got some help from our friendly neighborhood handyman guy. And we did pink lights, like the old fashioned big bulbs that are like 2 inches, you know?
Yeah.
And they're bright pink. They're like a perfect pink.
Oh, I need to see pictures of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause sometimes you get the pink bulbs and they're either like too magenta, they're like a little too purpley,
yeah,
or they're like too light.
Yeah.
But these are just like a really great, like, bubblegum pink.
I love it.
It looks awesome.
Yay.
I love it. And I put up my tree. The first few years we were in the house, there was actually a tree that was left behind in the attic, an artificial one. And then I acquired 2 kind of small, skinny pencil ones at various doorbuster events at craft stores and whatnot over the years. So my main tree in the past has been sort of sugar plum, partridge in a pear tree themed.
Nice.
So like kind of a lot of purple and gold. And then I got a whole bunch of just little kind of bejeweled fruits.
Baubles.
So I've got, yeah, baubles and like, you know, pears. Oh, nice. And apples.
Yes.
And plums and grapes and pomegranates.
Delightful.
And just,
yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, you know, fruit.
Festive
themed.
Fruit.
Festive fruit.
I love it. Christmas fruit.
And then I had these other trees, because my fantasy is to one day not be in a post-Halloween coma and actually do some Yule decorations and decorate the house like a gingerbread house.
Oh, cute. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like a Queen Anne gingerbread style house. But I've seen all these like really cute crafts that people have done of making like huge size candies, or, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like big candy canes would be super cute.
Yeah, like big candy canes.
Big
gumdrops.
Like
yeah, big gumdrops. Or I saw some cute stuff where people got like little kind of like round bowl planters and turned them upside down and got foil and made like big Hershey kisses.
Oh,
or you know, like big ice cream cones. And someone used like a pink insulation to make like cotton candies. And I saw somebody do like that spray foam.
Yeah.
They made like big giant popcorns and did like,
oh,
garlands.
Wow.
Of giant. Yeah, like really, really cute,
cool,
creative things.
Not very expensive, some of it. Yeah.
Right. Very easy to
but
DIY.
But you gotta fucking
I'm
do
just
it.
Lazy.
No, yeah. It's not lazy. Right. That's just a lot. It's a lot. Dude, I have 3 boxes of Christmas stuff sitting in my living room. They've been there for a week and a half. Shh.
So this year, since I was very excited about the lights, yes. I did the tree. I had, because for the hallway, the small trees that were in the hallway originally, I did kind of like a Candyland theme. So I decided to put all of those on the one tree. So it is Candyland themed. I've got some very cute, like, blown glass. Like, the past few years at the various craft stores, they've had, like, you know, like little, like, dishes of, like, banana splits and, like, yeah, pie and, like, waffles and cake.
Cute.
And,
yeah,
and, like, all kinds of, like, little sweets and, like, little gingerbread men and... so that is Candyland.
I love it.
So that is what is going on here.
I'm pretty excited. I wish I could see it in person. It sounds lovely.
Thank you.
Since we have been in renovation hell with our basement bathroom that has taken way over the amount of time it should take to complete a very, very small bathroom, I have not really got into it, but it's almost done. Very excited. Might get to enjoy maybe a couple of weeks worth of decor. But yeah. Yeah. So, okay. But this dovetail, like your Christmas Yule action dovetails into what we're talking about, which is weird, mostly pagan. I have one that's not, but pagan, weird characters of Yule.
Yes. Yes. So... Some are gift givers. Some are arbiters
not,
of justice.
Right.
Arbiters
of justice.
And like Santa Claus himself, who is very, very nominally glossed as like some kind of Christian saint martyr.
Yeah.
Who's really just super fucking pagan.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be fun to talk about some of the other ones. You know, Krampus has been the internet's favorite Christmas bad boy for a while now.
Yeah.
But there are many others,
yes,
that are very strange and exciting. And so I thought it'd be fun to talk about a few of them and also think outside the box a little bit of what constitutes a holiday character.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So do you want me to start?
Do you want me to kick it off with the Yule Cat?
Yes.
I'm really excited to talk about the Yule Cat.
I'm so excited for you to tell me about, because I don't really know anything about it. I just suggested you do it because, and I quote, I thought that your cats would be really into a giant black cat that eats children.
Yeah. Oh, they're into it. So
they're so into it.
This is
okay.
Icelandic. It is called Jolokatrin or Jolokatur. It's a giant cat. And when I say giant, I mean it is taller than your house. Giant.
It's a kaiju.
It's a big ass cat. Yes, it's a cat.
Kaiju cat.
Kaiju. I'm sorry.
Neko kaiju.
Yes, it's a
Neko kaiju.
Yes, Neko kaiju. Big ass cat. Black cat. Yes, and he is said to wander the snowy countryside during the Yuletide season. And all right, here's his deal. He's gonna eat the people that do not receive new clothes for Christmas. So
if you are not dressed well, if you are looking like a scrub.
Now you got to have some new clothes under the tree for you. Like if you do not have some new clothes, like as presents under the tree, he's going to eat you.
Okay.
I know you're like, why? Okay. Well, there's a couple of theories, but my favorite one was that they think it might have been used as a threat and an incentive for farmers to finish processing the wool collected in autumn to finish it before Christmas.
Okay.
So like, make those socks, motherfucker, basically. But yeah, it's if you have the new socks, like just displayed, I guess, for the cat, you won't get eaten. The cat will just move right by your house. But if not, you are now prey. So you have to display your gifts.
Okay. So he doesn't just like kind of sense.
No, he does not.
It's not like Santa Claus where he just sort of has some kind of omnipotence.
He doesn't have like a list
to know what's going on with
you.
No,
he looks in your window. So he wants to see your fucking socks.
He wants to see scarves and socks and gloves and hats. And that would actually be a really cute decorating theme, actually.
Giant cats? I mean, yes.
Well, definitely. But also, get just some knitted, like, swags and, like, decorate your staircase with, like, little woolen mittens and scarves and
Yeah, well, and then the cat won't eat you.
Here,
I'll read a little bit of what I picked up off of our dear friend Wikipedia. The first theory, proposed by folklorist Arne Bjornsson, points to a footnote by Arneson, who was a folk writer, which noted the existence of a figure of speech, quote, to dress the cat.
Like the cat's pajamas.
Maybe, yeah. The lack of any written sources about the Yule cat prior to his Arneson's writings. So, like, he was the first source, really, and then I think it just got extrapolated into a monster cat. Like, this phrase just, like, took a life of its own. Now, what's interesting, and kind of dovetails into another Christmas character, Icelandic Christmas character. They have a bunch. Oh, also,
they do have a bunch,
also,
and they're all mean. They're all scary.
There's a 16-foot cat, Yule cat, in Reykjavik that they put out just for Christmas.
Oh, I didn't
see
it.
I've
seen the real. There are very many adorable and well-fed kitty cats sunning in windows all over Reykjavik.
I love that.
I photographed as many as I could.
No, this is a giant ass, scary looking cat.
Nice.
Yeah, that's in the town square. So, but
excellent.
Later on, this giant Yule cat turns into, like, it sort of morphs into this other folk tale that is about Grilla, who is an ogress, and the cat eventually is in the tales as like now she's. The Yule cat is her pet. So Grilla is an ogress. She also, guess what, loves to eat bad little naughty children. She cooks them in a big pot, and her husband is lazy, and they live in a cave. Also, she has sons. They are
the Yule lads.
Yes. How did you know?
Because I've been to Iceland, motherfucker.
Right. They're called the Yule lads or Yule men or the Yuletide lads. They got lots of little names. They are the sons of the lazy man and Grilla. And there are 13 of them. They are pranksters. And they basically steal from you or harass you.
Yeah, they play tricks.
Yes.
They were trying to explain it to me, and I don't know all their names, but their names, it's kind of like the Seven Dwarves, where their names are descriptive of what they're like.
Right.
So there's one that they like to do dumb things, like, I guess, like steal your shoes or like slash your tires or.
Yeah, this is.
I don't
this,
put gas, put sugar in your gas tank. I don't know.
They come like one by one over the final 13 nights leading up to Christmas. And they leave tiny gifts in the shoes of children, or they place it on the windowsill. But if the child is bad and naughty, they leave you a rotten potato.
Oh, gosh.
Which I kind of love.
That's so specific.
I know. I love it.
You know what? I like a rotten potato more than coal, because coal's actually useful. It's just not a fun present.
Yeah, rotten potato.
But a rotten potato, you can't do anything with it except poison somebody.
I mean, I don't even think you want to feed that to birds or anything.
No, once they start sprouting, they are poisonous.
Really? I've eaten some that have sprouted. I'm fine.
Well, you're not supposed to eat the sprout part.
Well, no, you cut the little eyes out.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, so they're bad little guys, or fun little prankster guys. So there are even more Icelandic Christmas characters, but we will leave it at Yule Cat and the Yuletide lads, because I really think the cat is by far one of the best characters I've ever read about. There's not a whole lot of
the cat's pretty great.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of giant man-eating cat characters.
Like a fucking cat. It's not like a tiger or a like.
No, it's just a regular
cat.
It's
just a regular house cat that's just big and like,
well,
is mean to you.
So what?
Yes.
What's exciting about that I learned when I was in Iceland, which I never thought about, but because it's an island and it's like geologically young.
Yes.
All the animals that live there are either things that could swim there or fly there,
right,
or were subsequently
brought yeah.
by settlers.
Right.
So in like, you know, after the year 600. So Iceland does not have any natural predators on it. There are no predatory animals whatsoever there. So the idea that they had to invent one, and it happens to be a giant cat that just lives out on the glacier somewhere, is amazing.
Well, it's also like, it's a cat, you know, it's not like small. They're not terrifying, really, unless they're real mean and shitty. But, you know, they're not like, a cat is not scary. But if you make
it's also
it as
interesting
big...
that it's a domestic animal. So it's sort of like at this time of year where you are at odds against the elements in Iceland, where it's dark for most of the day. It is really fucking cold. All the roads are like fucking impassable.
Yeah.
Because I drove on some of them. And so it's a very harsh climate. And the fact that like the idea of like a fellow domestic animal is going to visit vengeance upon you in this environment is sort of like basically admitting people aren't supposed to live here during this time of year.
But I also like to take it one step further and think about how, you know, we are always talking about like the magic in the mundane, like magic in the everyday. Like a cat is like an everyday, well, it's an everyday occurrence for me, but you know, like a cat's just like a cat until you make it giant and angry. So it's like taking this ordinary thing and making it completely extraordinary. So as always, good job Iceland
ruling. I would love to know more about the mythology of the cat caring about the clothes, but I guess maybe, and I don't know if this is like a trope in other countries, but you know, I always grew up with this image of like a kitten playing with a ball of yarn, right?
Yeah.
So maybe there's like some kind of
like
association of cats with wool production. Like they like to play with the yarn, and they probably live in the barn with the sheep to, you know, keep pests away.
Yeah.
So maybe there's just like the connection between woolens and cats might be stronger than it seems at first glance.
No, but I think I get it. It's like, okay, so if this was a threat to the farmers, like basically, hey, you got to give your kids new clothes or the cat, or, you know, I need to be able to give my children clothing so the giant cat doesn't come and eat them. Also, there's a variation where the cat just eats the food of the people without new clothes and doesn't eat the people. But I prefer the first version.
What I think is interesting about that is it's not really like a threat to the children. I mean, like, well, it is a threat to the children, but they don't have any control over
whether or not they get new clothes.
Whether or not they get new clothes. So
exactly. Yeah, but kids, you know, just eat them.
Maybe. Well, it could also be it's like encouraging kids to want like boring, mundane presents.
Oh, that's, yeah, I like that too. You know how we
all. Well, you should be excited that you're just getting socks, right? Because if you weren't getting socks, the cat would
eat you. Giant cat will eat you. So yeah. Yeah, delightful, right?
Oh, Yule cat.
Okay, do you want to go?
Yes. So I was going to talk about my personal favorite, the Sugar Plum Fairy.
I need to know more.
Okay. Well, so my exposure to the Sugar Plum Fairy was through the Nutcracker Ballet. And I remember we had my family's Christmas tree was like very eclectic. Like ever since I can remember, we had like a few sets of ornaments that clearly were just bought, like, okay, these are starter ornaments or whatever, and then just like a lot of little things that we've collected over the years. But we had a set of these like matte porcelain Nutcracker characters. And my favorite one was the little Sugar Plum Fairy. She wasn't dressed like a ballerina. She was actually in this like diaphanous purple dress, and she had long black hair. And she's kind of striking like a very demure pose, but like, I don't know. I was just always really fascinated with her. So I would often take her off the tree and like play with her and like the other little characters and the nativity scene and like the little Christmas village thing. So I always really liked that. And I also just, let's be real, the Nutcracker Suite fucking slaps. Like,
I mean,
it is nonstop banger,
straight banger for sure, all of it,
the whole fucking thing. I love Tchaikovsky. I didn't realize that at the time it was not a very popular ballet. People felt like the story was really dumb, which in fact it is.
It's not great.
Because previously, the ballets he had scored were Sleeping Beauty and Swan Lake, which are very psychological. Yeah. There's like a lot of character development. Yeah. You know, the Prima Ballerina is the character of the Sugar Plum Fairy, but she only has one dance.
Yeah, just the
so
one.
So that makes very little sense. It's just a really kind of wacko story. And also, they originally cast, like, because there's a lot of characters that are children.
Right.
And people really didn't like that. They were like, I want to see grown-ass ballerinas.
Dude,
like,
if I'm coming to the ballet, show me,
yeah,
show me real ballet, not kids' ballet. Even though children can be just as good. But,
sure.
Yeah, no.
So, just a quick recap. So, the Nutcracker, it was scored by Tchaikovsky, who wrote the music, Marius Petipa and Lev Ivanov did the choreographies. And Ivan Vizevolovsky and Marius Petipa adapted the story from a folk tale but on E.T.A. Hoffman's 1816 fairy tale, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. And it's basically, if you're not familiar with the story, if you're just sort of more familiar with the dance and the music and everything.
I know. Tell the story.
It's a little family, Clara. She's a little girl. She's celebrating Christmas Eve, I guess, with her family. Some kind of kooky family friend who's her godfather, Herr Drosselmeyer, yes, who is this doll maker. He brings these like little mechanical dancing dolls. And he gives her a nutcracker, and so they all go to bed. The nutcracker gets hurt or something, so she has it in a little bed, and she's hoping that he'll feel better. And so she sneaks out of her bed to go check on the nutcracker, and discovers that the Rat King is attacking. And so all the toys come to life to battle the Rat King, and then they win the battle, and then the Nutcracker turns into a prince.
Right.
And they hop on a sleigh and go dashing through the snow to the land of sweets.
That's right.
Where the Sugar Plum Fairy is the ruler, and she presents a series of entertainments.
A myriad of dances, and they are delightful.
So this is a complete weird fever dream. It makes no sense. There's no real beginning, middle, or end. It just sort of ends with them in fairy. Like, it's...
Yeah.
To be fair, the original critics being like, this story's fucking bonkers, are correct. But what I thought was really interesting is I think everybody, even if you don't notice such, everyone knows the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy music. It's the...
Yeah, that one.
And the reason why that's so recognizable is the choreographer wanted the Sugar Plum Fairy's music to sound like, quote unquote, drops of water shooting from a fountain.
Lovely. Aww.
And so Tchaikovsky was like, challenge accepted. And he found in Paris, in 1891, this instrument called the Celesta,
yes,
which is super cute. Obviously, Celesta meaning like celestial or the sky. Yeah. And what it is it looks like a little keyboard. It looks like a piano, but instead of the keys striking a string in a piano, they strike like a little bell.
Like a little chime. Yep.
Yeah, like a little chime. And so he got the producer of the show to buy it and keep it a secret because he didn't want other composers to hear about it and try to use it before he finished this ballet. Of course, it was like a giant sensation. Celestas have been used in other things. It's used in other pieces in the Nutcracker Suite, but like, it immediately was associated with this particular piece of music.
Right.
And honestly, it would be really hard to try to base a composition around Celesta without people being like, this is like Sugar Plum Fairy
music.
Yeah.
Right.
So, stroke of genius with that. The other Absolutely. Thing with the music that I grew up on is I was introduced to it not through seeing it as the ballet of the Nutcracker, but through Fantasia.
Yes, of course.
The animated movie.
Yes.
Which is fascinating because parts of it are very balletic, like the Waltz of the Flower. Like they've got like the fairies that are changing the leaves and then are right. dancing snowflakes. But then there's also parts of it where the Turkish coffee dance is like that weird sexy fish.
Like a sexy fish. It is 100% a sexy fish.
Yeah.
Which I still love it, but it's...
No, it's great. That's literally what it is. And then the tea dance is like, the little mushrooms and the flowers and stuff.
Yep.
So,
cute. Always my
one,
favorite. Yeah.
Just opening up my mind to the world of synesthetic, like, art and music.
Right.
And interpreting music artistically, interpreting it visually, and not necessarily in the narrative way that... because obviously it's not illustrating the story of the Nutcracker whatsoever.
No.
But I fell in love with that music from that.
Same.
And I think because of the other parts of Fantasia that I like that are by other composers, but I always really liked the Greek mythology part.
Same.
With the centaurs.
Of course.
Love it.
Always one of
my
favorite
parts. So I always
parts.
Kind of associated Fantasia with this very like pagan,
yeah,
mysterious, magical,
well,
otherworldly.
The whole Night on Bald Mountain scene is
fucking
amazing. Like the whole movie, I mean, we could do a whole episode on that, but right, like that's how I got introduced to a lot of this classical music too, because my mother took me to see that movie at a very young age. Like, but
yeah, I had it on VHS and I would basically skip from the Nutcracker Suite to the Greek mythology. I didn't really care for the dancing hippos and ostriches and stuff. Not my favorite. Don't care for Mickey Mouse doing the that's, and then I would skip to Night on Bald Mountain, which is also pagan as fuck.
Pagan as fuck. I think it was still, they would like show it once a year in certain theaters, so my mom would drag me around because it was before the VHS tapes. So yeah, but right, so beautiful. But I loved the way that, like, I think I saw that before I actually saw the ballet, but then when I got to be a certain age, like probably 6 or 7, my mom started taking me every year to the ballet. So, but yeah, like also when I was a child, that ballet was confusing to me because I was like, well, the cool thing, they always made the tree like be a normal tree. And then the tree gets really big to show you the scale of like, well, now the rats are like normal size. They're not like tiny, tiny. They're like people sized rats now because you're under the tree, you know, so right. Like perspective change. But I mean, the whole dance with the rats and everything is completely bonkers.
The whole thing just makes zero sense.
Yeah, it's really...
And also in the sense that it's not even like a beginning, middle, or end. No. Like, the beginning is okay, so it's Christmas Eve, they're getting some presents. Then there's a weird battle. And then they just fuck off to like a completely different location.
Never Never Land. And you know, yeah, and they don't really ever... Like, they wrap it up in Never Never Land. It's not like she wakes up from a dream... or anything.
Like,
it's just like,
it was all a dream.
No, she like is now the queen of fucking Snowland. So yeah. Anyway.
Right.
Okay.
So, but I was like, where? So I knew that it was based on a fairy tale. But then I was like, well, but what is this based on? Because of course, you know, as the Brothers Grimm, their research into German folktales and everything proved that a lot of these things are very, very old tales.
Right.
That have gotten distilled through the centuries, but harken back to either historical events or cautionary tales or even like pagan worship. So I was like, what is the deal with Sugar Plum Fairy? So first, the other thing is so contemporary to this, the other Sugar Plum mention that associating it with Christmas is the night before Christmas.
Yeah.
With visions of sugar plums dancing in their heads.
Right.
So I was like, what is the deal with sugar plums and Christmas? And I will try to tell you. So okay.
I'm ready.
In the Middle Ages in England, the word sugar plum was originally just kind of it was just any kind of confection. So candying things is a really effective way to preserve them, just like salting or pickling things.
Yeah.
So candying fruits, like a plum or any other kind of fruit like that, would be a effective way to preserve it.
Right.
But it's also time consuming, and sugar was very, very expensive back then. So of course it would be a very special, valuable treat.
Right.
At an event such as Christmas or something like that.
Right.
And sugar plums kind of, although they might have started out being plums, it kind of just referred to any kind of poached fruit or like minced and dried fruit with nuts or whatever.
Okay.
It also came to be associated with like little comfits, like sugared nuts, where it's basically you just like, they're very time consuming to make before they industrialized it, where it's just, you add these thin, thin layers of candy to make up like a hard candy shell, like an M&M or like a Jordan almond or something like that.
Yeah.
And those were also called sugar plums. I think it has to do kind of more with the shape of it just being like kind of a round, like little bonbon truffle type.
Well,
of
and it makes
thing.
Sense when you say plum just kind of morphed into like any candied fruit or sweet, because, you know, plum pudding, I don't think it has literal plums in it. You know, I think that is
I don't even know.
That's like a phrase for like in England, they call everything a pudding, but it's like just a trifle or something.
Right.
Anyway.
So, and then also, there's a lot of language in English going back to the Middle Ages to the present of plum also having a meaning of something being like good or enticing, like a plum job,
right?
Or something like that. So something that's a sugar plum would also because it's a very sweet treat that everybody wanted and you only get every so often, calling something a sugar plum also has potentially the connotation of it being like something you covet or a prize or something that's like a really good deal, you know.
So,
like a plum
is that why Mr. Scarlet always calls you sugar plum? Sugar plum, you're like a sweet treat.
I am.
You are.
I'm like a sweet little bride.
But right, like it's a pet name. I mean, I've heard people call other people sugar plum. I mean, not in my family, but you know. Anyway.
So that's the deal with sugar plums as like a confection. And as to why they were clearly wildly popular in the 19th century and people were associating them with Christmas, and today we don't like, I've never had a sugar plum. Like,
I don't, yeah. No.
Well, part of it was because the language was used, people refer to all different kinds of sweets as sugar plums.
Right.
So then in the modern era where you have branded candy, yeah, where like an M&M is an M&M. Like,
right.
M&Ms are a specific thing, you know.
You don't,
like,
call a Skittle an M&M. I can't say,
yeah,
M&M. Right. It's so, not like in Texas where we call everything a Coke.
Right.
It's different.
But because of that branding issue,
yeah,
these types of candies, you know, got renamed because, yeah, the word sugar plum does not have a lot of meaning.
Right.
Because it's so generic.
Right.
And so, yeah. So anyway, that's the deal about sugar plums. But the other stuff that I thought was interesting, the more I thought about it, was, of course, you have a fairy.
Right.
And even though this story's pretty clunky, stories about being spirited away to the fairy realm, mm, and feasting and sitting down and being entertained by the queen or the king and queen of fairyland or elfame, is very common in a lot of mythologies, particularly Northern European and British ones. And I was also thinking of, she falls asleep under the Christmas tree. And you just mentioned that the thing that you remember so distinctly as a child is the tree getting big.
Yes.
And hello, journeying up and down the world tree, yeah, is a thing that is common to a lot of different shamanistic systems. Yeah. So the idea of journeying up and down this tree to different realms,
yeah, absolutely,
totally has, yeah, a pagan vibe.
Love it.
And then also it being on Christmas or the winter solstice, this sort of dark night of the soul. You also have a lot of mythology in England and Northern Europe about the wild hunt, mm, of either Perchta or Odin, or sometimes even King Arthur leading a host of dark fae or the mighty dead on a kind of unholy parade across the sky.
Can I do a quick aside about Perchta?
Yes.
Okay, so Frau Perchta is another Christmas character, pagan Christmas character. She Germany, Austria, she is a witch. She will rip out your internal organs and replace them with garbage if you have been bad.
What the fuck? I respect it. I respect it a lot.
So metal. I mean, replace, you don't even, like, rip out your organs is bad enough. But, like,
yeah, but filling you full of garbage is horrible.
That's okay. That's badass.
That's some Cronenberg shit. Like,
anyway.
That's,
I wanted, wow, to just, like, I didn't know that until tonight. So since you said Perchta, I'm like, let's talk about that for just 2 seconds. Yeah, that ain't right. But good for that witch.
There's
right.
also been a lot of scholarship about the handful of witch trial documents that we have that were voluntary confessions. The ones that were not, you know, induced under torture, that are about, like, the devil and Satan, yeah, and blah blah blah, yeah, actually people describe going to fairyland or going to elfland, mm, and sitting down with the queen. She has various names. Sometimes she's associated with Diana or Artemis, or sometimes she's these, like, Arthurian kind of vibes. But so this seems to be a remnant of a much earlier pre-Christian sort of pagan tradition about, right, a sort of shamanistic journey to the other world.
Like a forest land or something. Yeah.
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 So I love all of that. You could also say a lot of like kind of psychoanalysis about the idea of Clara kind of transforming from a child to a young woman, through, you know, either the romance with the Nutcracker or, I mean, she fights in this rat battle. So, I mean, also she's like fighting. So she's becoming a warrior, but she's also becoming a young woman. So anyway, that is the whole deal with the Sugar Plum Fairy. But I've always really liked her as a character. And I had a fucking blast last year because I have a friend that throws like kind of like a naughty Santa Christmas holiday present.
Fun. Yeah.
And encourages people to like creatively dress in like naughty or risque outfits.
Ooh.
And of course, as you can imagine, a lot of them are like not that creative. You know, like, oh, yeah. I'm like a little sexy Santa's helper elf or
sexy
whatever.
Sexy elf. Yeah.
Everyone's wearing, you know, red and white, maybe red and green. Mm. And I've been wanting to go to this party and I haven't been able to go for a few years because, you know, there's a lot going on during this month. But last year I got to go and I had been planning this outfit forever. I was like, I'm going to be the Sugar Plum Fairy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had this super cute, like, lavender vinyl little crop top and like little shorts. And then I also got some ballet boots, which are like fetish boots.
Yeah.
They're like pointed. They're like toe shoes, but they're leather boots. And I had like a little lavender wig and I had wings and I did my makeup like all sparkly. And I was definitely the only person wearing that color.
Also, where are the fucking pictures of that, bitch? I know you didn't send me pictures of that. So I think you need to do that. But awesome.
Well, my like entire ass is visible, but
I don't need
know,
to. I
I'll
mean, I'm pretty sure I've seen your ass before.
But yeah, of course you have.
But like, also, you're kind of like a 90s Sugar Plum Fairy. I love it with the like the hot pants and the or like half of a hot pant and like a crop top. I love it. Love it. Very cool. I like that. I have one that is not pagan, but bananas. Now, I learned about this it's been, I guess, 10 years ago now, maybe more, because I made one of these and gave it to our mutual friend who loves martial arts. This is called Tio de Nadal. This is a Catalan tradition. It is related to the Yule log and the Germanic Christmas tree, but this is a log. On the log, you put a little hat on it, a little red hat, and you give it a really big smiley face. And you also put it on like two or four little stick legs. And it's about, you get one that's about a foot long. Now, you have to feed this log every night. Just give it a little nibble of food. You start December 8th. You start giving it a little food every night and you cover it with a little blanket so it doesn't get cold. Okay. So are you with me so far? Here's the story. The days preceding Christmas, the children must take good care of the log, keeping it warm and feeding it so that it will defecate presents on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve. That's right.
What?
It's a shit log. That's right.
It's like Mr. Hankey. That's
literally, yes. I think they stole it. I think South Park stole this. This is a real thing. On Christmas Day, you put it into the fireplace on Christmas Day, like partially in the fireplace, and you tell it to shit. Like you order it to defecate. The fire part is no longer a thing that people really do. Like you don't necessarily put it in the fireplace. A lot of homes don't have a fireplace. So instead you beat it with sticks and you sing a little song. Here's the song.
Right. Obviously.
You ready for the song?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I didn't know we were going to. Yes.
I'm not going to give it a tune. Or, I mean, I could just make one up, but I think that's a stretch. Shit, Tio. Hazelnuts and nougats. Do not shit herrings. They are too salty. Shit nougats. They taste better. shit, Tio. Almonds and nougats. And if you don't want to shit, I will hit you with a stick. Shit, Tio. That's the song.
What?
I bet it's better in Spanish or Catalan, but
Catalan. Caga tío, avellanas y toro, no cagues arregande. I don't speak Catalan. I'm
That's okay.
It's like Spanish.
But it's like literally
que son masas saladas, caga torrons, que son mes bon. Oh, so I guess that sounds very French there. Que son mes bon.
Mes
caga
bon.
Tío, ametes y toro. Y si no vols cagar, et donare un cop de bastro.
All right. Well, you sing the songs to the T.O. Before you beat the T.O., all the kids have to leave the room and go to another area of the house to pray, asking for the T.O. to deliver lots of presents. Evidently,
shit, man, I'll take a shitlog president at this point.
I think it would be better than the one we have. I will say that now the praying has gone by the wayside. Imagine that. We've lost the fireplace and the praying. So that's fine. But kids still go to a different room and they warm their stick next to a fire. And then the relatives come and hide the presents under the blanket that is on top of the log. You remember the blanket to keep it warm.
Yeah.
Hide their little treats under the blanket. So the Tio does not really like do large objects. It's like little candies, nuts, small toys, maybe dried figs, which I am 100% down with. Usually what comes out of the Tio is like a communal gift, so to be shared. And that is the story of Cacatillo, which I love, and I made one for our good friend. I made one for her, and it was adorable. I don't know that I have pictures anymore, but she told me that she gave it a little treat every night. And I think I did something crazy, like I snuck presents under it at some point or something. I don't know. That sounds like something I would do. But anyway, Cagatillo, everyone.
Wow.
The log that shits you presents. Yes.
Well, I mean, it seems like it has some kind of origin in the fact that, like, in the darkest, coldest month of the year, like, the log is what you would be burning.
Right.
And
it gives you...
So kind of this idea of, like, you got to ration your wood.
Yep.
You've got to teach the kids respect for this resource. Because yes. Obviously if you run out of wood or it gets wet, y'all are going to get real cold.
Right.
So...
Well, and also with that fire, that's how you get food. I mean, you know, you can cook food with fire. So like, yeah, like the log represents like this, like you said, like this resource. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting concept that quickly turned insane, but I love this little story and, like I kind of want to incorporate it into my own traditions. Oh, we have a tradition. So do you have any traditions personally that you all do that are, you know, outside the norm, I guess?
Do I like to blast Nutcracker Sweet and just run around the house.
I like that.
Like a crazy person.
I love that.
We bake shortbread. That's a big one.
Yeah.
A lot of it is New Year's Day stuff.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the Scottish superstitions I got from my mom are more about New Year's Day.
Got it.
Save
that for the New Year's episode.
Right. Yeah. So
I have one, and I don't know how I found this. I think it was probably in a catalog or something. I started doing this. Oh, wow. It's probably been over 20 years ago. And I don't do it every year, but they sell something called a peppermint pig, which is also a Cocteau Twins song. So that's probably why I was like, I need to incorporate this in my life.
Oh, I've seen this in like one of those shishi catalogs of like fun, quirky holiday things.
Pretty sure I think that's where I got it. It's awesome. It's a little, it's like a, I would say it's probably 6 inches long by 3 or 4, maybe 3 inches wide pig, like molded pig made of entirely solid peppermint. And Yum. So what you do, and this is so much fun, and maybe I'll try to get one for our family thing this year. But if you put it in the middle of the table, and then everybody, it comes with a tiny little hammer, which is amazing. Right. And everybody goes around the table and you make a wish and you like hit the pig, and then like a chunk breaks off, and like that's your wish. You get to like, I don't know, do whatever you want with it, keep it, eat it, whatever. But like hitting the pig is the fun, because it like it'll like splinter everywhere and it gets real crazy. It's super fun. So,
oh, that sounds delightful.
Peppermint pig.
I like peppermint. I like little pigglies.
Yes.
I like
hammers.
I like
hitting
things.
Shit. Yes.
Yes. I like all of these things very much.
It's very cathartic. So, yes, that's a fun little tradition that maybe I'll bring back. I haven't done it in so long, but yeah, it's super fun. And that's really all I've got. I mean, I have certain like music that I listen to, and there's like, I know it's like, what kind of music is it? Well, let me tell you, I listen to the Anonymous Four Medieval Carols every single year and must listen to it at least twice, like whole album back to front. So good. If you're not into medieval carols, I don't know who you, I don't know why you listen to us. No, I'm just kidding. But like, all I'm saying is get you some medieval carols, because they are like very haunting and amazing. And there's like, I don't think there's either no instrumentation or very little. So you're gonna like it. All right. What else? Do we have any other Yule time fun to wrap this up with?
I do.
Okay,
so,
go. Yeah.
So it's kind of a long story, but
I'm here for it.
Basically, my friend and I, we were joking about like being scruffy or scraggly, and he was like, I'm a scraggle dude, and I was like, that's hilarious, scraggle dude, that sounds like some little Dutch Christmas character guy. And and we were joking about it, we just kept saying it over and over, and it just kept getting funnier and funnier. So I wrote like 5 paragraphs into ChatGPT of, I have created this character of Scraggle Dude, and can you take all these thoughts and put that into a story?
Like a Christmas story?
Yes.
Okay.
So I would like to read to you Scraggle Dude, and this is S-C-R-A-G-G-L-E-D, O with an umlaut, O with an umlaut, D.
Okay.
Scraggle Dude.
All right.
Okay. So really up into this, the first half of this is literally what I wrote and just kind of polished to make it sound more like a fairy tale. And then it goes kind of off the rails
into
the land of, yeah. So
to the AI
land. Get ready.
I'm ready. I'm ready. Go.
Get ready.
Okay.
Long ago, in a forest covered with snow, there lived a strange creature named Scraggle Dude. He was a wild sylvan faun or satyr type figure, feral but mischievously benevolent. He had a faintly goat-like face, a long beard, and scraggly hair. He had 2 long toenails that he used to climb low trees and make a dense nest. He loved the winter, especially the night of the winter solstice, when the darkness was the longest and the stars were brightest. On that night, he would wake up from his slumber and roam the forest looking for fun and adventure. He would play tricks on the animals, make snowmen and snow angels, and sing songs to the moon. He would also look for the good witches and wizards who lived in the forest and join them in their celebration of the winter Sabbath. They would welcome him with open arms and share their food, drink, and magic with him. They would dance around the fire, tell stories, and cast spells. They would honor the spirits of the forest and ask for their blessings for the new year. They would also give gifts to Scraggle Dude, such as nuts, berries, honey, and wool. Scraggle Dude was very happy with his friends, and he would reward them with his own gifts, such as feathers, crystals, herbs, and charms. He would also protect them from any harm and help them with their troubles. But not everyone in the forest was kind to Scraggle Dude. There were some bad children who lived in the nearby village who hated the winter and the darkness. They were greedy, selfish, and mean. They would sneak into the forest at night and destroy the snowmen and snow angels that Scraggle Dude had made. They would throw stones at the animals and cut down the trees. They would also spy on the witches and wizards and try to ruin their celebration. They would throw mud at the fire, steal their food and drink, and break their magic tools.
Oh my God.
They would mock the spirits of the forest and curse them with their words. They would also take the gifts that Scraggle Dude had received and throw them away or burn them. Scraggle Dude was very angry with these children, and he would punish them with his own tricks, such as making them slip on the ice, getting them lost in the woods, or scaring them with his howls. He would also curse them with bad luck, sickness, and nightmares.
Wow.
One year, on the night of the winter solstice, Scraggle Dude woke up as usual and went to the forest to have fun. He found his friends, the witches and wizards, and joined them in their celebration. They had a wonderful time and exchanged their gifts. Scraggle Dude received a beautiful cloak made of red wool with silver stars and moons on it. He was very pleased with it and put it on. He felt warm and cozy and thanked his friends for their kindness. But as he was enjoying himself, he heard a noise in the bushes. He looked and saw the bad children hiding there. They had followed him to the forest and were waiting for a chance to attack. They had brought with them a big net, a sharp knife, and a torch. They wanted to catch Scraggle Dude, cut off his beard and hair, and burn his nest.
Wow.
They also wanted to take his cloak and rip it to pieces. Yeah. No. They hated Scraggle Dude and they wanted to make him suffer. Scraggle Dude saw them and he knew what they were planning. He was not afraid, but he was very angry. He decided to teach them a lesson they would never forget. He pretended not to notice them and continued to dance and sing with his friends. He waited for the right moment and then he made his move. He ran towards the bushes and jumped over them. He landed on the bad children and knocked them down. He grabbed the net and the knife and the torch and threw them away. He then grabbed the children by their collars and dragged them to the fire. He shouted to his friends, "Look what I have here! Some naughty children who want to spoil our fun. What should we do with them?" The witches and wizards were surprised, but they quickly understood what was going on. They saw the fear and the guilt in the children's eyes, and they knew they were the ones who had been causing trouble in the forest. They decided to help Scraggle Dude with his plan. They said, "We should teach them a lesson. We should make them join our celebration and show them the true meaning of the winter Sabbath." They made the children sit around the fire and gave them some food and drink. They told them stories about the forest and the spirits and the magic. They showed them their spells and their tools and their gifts. They explained to them why they loved the winter and the darkness and the stars. They told them that Scraggle Dude was their friend and their protector and their teacher. They told them that he was not a monster, but a spirit of nature who deserved respect and gratitude. The children listened and watched and tasted and felt. They saw the beauty and the wonder of the forest and the Sabbath and the magic. They felt the warmth and the joy of the fire and the friends and the gifts. They realized that they had been wrong and foolish and cruel. They felt sorry for what they had done and ashamed of themselves. They wanted to apologize and make amends. They turned to Scraggle Dude and said, "We are sorry, Scraggle Dude. We are sorry for hunting you, your friends, in the forest. We're sorry for stealing your gifts and destroying your creation. We're sorry for being bad children. Please forgive us and let us be your friends." Scraggle Dude looked at them and saw the sincerity and the remorse in their eyes. He saw that they had learned their lesson and changed their hearts. He decided to forgive them and give them a chance. He said, "I forgive you, children. I forgive you for your mistakes and for your mischief. I accept your apology and your friendship, but you must promise me one thing. You must never be bad again. You must respect the forest and the spirits and the magic. You must be kind to the animals and the trees and the snow. You must be good children and good people. Do you promise?" Children nodded and said, "We promise, Scraggle Dude. We promise to be good and to do good. Promise to honor the forest and the Sabbath and the magic. We promise to be your friends and your helpers. Thank you, Scraggle Dude. Thank you for your forgiveness and your friendship."
No.
So, but I was also like, hey, so like other folk tales, there's got to be like, you know, the Brothers Grimm version that like gets really dark and yeah. like oh, yeah. people get dismembered and shit.
Right.
So I asked the ChatGPT, so basically in this previous story, all of that was mostly stuff I wrote until it got to the part of them exchanging gifts and they gave him a cloak.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
And I was like, I don't know what all of that is about. And then the kids, the bad kids coming up and wanting to like cut off his beard and burn his nest. That was all.
ChatGPT? That's hilarious.
Yeah, so
wow.
That was crazy town.
Amazing.
So anyway, I wrote up all this stuff and I was basically like, can you write this all up as if it's like an article about comparing and contrasting the story of Scraggle Dude with like the original, like whatever the old version of the story is. And so I would like to read you that as well.
Okay, please do. Exciting.
The folktale of Scraggle Dude and the Winter Sabbat is a modern adaptation of the ancient pagan traditions and legends surrounding the winter solstice. It isn't. I made this up. We're going to act like it's real.
Right.
It portrays Scraggle Dude as a friendly and benevolent spirit who teaches and rewards the good children and punishes and reforms the bad ones. It also depicts the Winter Sabbat as a joyful and peaceful celebration of the forest, the spirits, and the magic. The story has a happy ending where everyone is reconciled and welcomed into the new year. However, this tale is very different than the older, darker, and more violent tales that were told in the past. These tales were meant to scare and warn people of the dangers and evils that lurked in the winter night. They portrayed Scraggle Dude as a terrifying and malevolent creature who tormented and killed the naughty children and dragged them to hell.
Wow. That went
they
south
also
quick.
Depict, yeah, they also depicted the Winter Sabbat as a sinister and bloody ritual of sacrifice and witchcraft. The story had a tragic ending where no one was spared and darkness prevailed.
That's my kind of fucking tale. Oh my God.
Yeah. And then it talks a little bit about comparing it and contrasting it to Krampus and then also Odin and the Wild Hunt, which we talked a little bit about at the top of the show.
So. That's amazing. Oh, I love it.
I also asked it to write me a song to the tune of Hey Jude. That's Hey Scraggle Dude.
Scraggle Dude. Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty, it's not great.
No.
But,
are you going to give it a jingle here? You can, or just read if you don't feel like singing, but you know.
So like, here are just a few of the lines. I'm not going to, it's like, hey, Scraggle Dude, don't be so rude. You were made to go out and have fun. Aww. The winter solstice is here. So cheer up, my dear. And remember to play with everyone. And then, hey, Scraggle Dude, don't be so crude. You can be a good friend if you try. You can share your gifts and your magic tricks and make the children laugh, not cry.
All right. Okay. I mean, I think we could work with that if we really wanted to extrapolate into a real song. We could do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Well, Scraggle Dude, the new hero for our times.
Scraggle Dude.
Scraggle Dude, the new Christmas folklore sensation.
Well, the other thing was that I've been watching Fargo. So
oh, yeah,
also,
same.
Every
so
time
good.
We would start talking oh about God. Scraggle Dude, we were like, you know Scraggle Dude.
You
and
know.
Just talking in like that oh accent. So
you're watching the new one, right?
Yeah, it's really oh good. God. I didn't really care for the other ones, but ugh. This one's much more Coen Brothers-y.
Yes.
And I love it.
I mean, John Hamm is killing it. It's so good. Yeah, it's really, really good. I think that wraps up Yule Time Good Times. What do you say?
I'm here for a Yule time. not a long
not
time.
Not a long time.
I'm here for a long night, not a long time.
Hey! All right, then. Okay, well, everybody go out and buy your Christmas log and make it shit you some
shit.
Gifts. That's right. And don't forget to thank Scraggle Dude for his also gifts and benevolence.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Okay, this has been fun. All right, till next time.
Hocus pocus, witches.